Hey everybody, welcome back to the Friday Filibuster. We took a couple weeks, but we are back in form, and we did those. It was like a sabbatical. I would say we went on sabbatical. Right, Mac McIntyre?
Yeah, we took 2 weeks off. So
that's right. That's a record. I don't think we've ever taken 2 weeks off in a row before.
No. And a stretch.
That's the DVD verdict. the DVD verdict man is keeping us down. You know? Daryl Loomis.
Hey, hey.
And Eric Escherslager.
Hey, how you doing?
And that is us. So we'll get right to it. A lot to catch up on, I assume, or maybe not. Maybe we just kind of sat on our butts. But, Mac, what have you got to report?
Let's see. Well, it's been 2 weeks, quite a lot. I guess the big news is Skyfall.
That's right. Which we will put that to our rear spoiler section. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast. We'll probably bid farewell to Eric, who has not seen it yet, but Daryl, Mac, and I will get all spoilery up in here. So we'll talk Skyfall at the end.
Beyond that, I picked up Assassin's Creed 3 and have been playing it.
And?
How was it?
I'm enjoying it. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun. I'm getting my butt kicked a lot.
Okay.
They redesigned the combat system. So the previous games with the counterattacks and the one where you can just – basically, once you mastered the counterattacks, you were unkillable. And I liked being unkillable.
The old games, yeah.
The previous Assassin's Creed games. I liked being unkillable. Unkillable was good, but
it's always better than getting your ass kicked.
But this new combat system is a pretty steep learning curve. But
does it seem worth it, or is it just like an exercise in difficulty?
No, it's definitely worth it. Keep in mind, I'm not a hardcore gamer, so
right.
But yeah, basically, the bad guys attack, you counter, and then you're given the choice to either disarm or just go straight for the kill. And you only have like a second to make that decision. And I'm not describing it very well, but the fight animations are really cool and really slick. And the whole world you're exploring takes place during the American Revolution, which is awesome.
Have you done any of the sea battles or anything like that?
The sea battles are tricky. It's a lot of stuff going on at once because. Unlike other games where you're on a boat, the boat is just a car in the water. This one, you're actually having to like navigate the winds.
Oh, excellent!
Yeah. So while you're shooting your cannons and getting cannon fire shot at you, you also have to like monitor your sails so you know you're going with the wind and stuff. So
now, can
it's
you
really
keel haul anybody?
Not yet.
Keel haul any?
I got my fingers crossed for that.
Any sea dogs. So how's the history? How's the history of it? Like the atmosphere, you know, the American Revolution, all that. Is that handled well?
It's handled really well. Yeah. You're fighting the Redcoats. I mean, they make for a great, you know, kind of stormtrooper type bad guys. Yeah.
Are we allowed to say Redcoats now in the 21st century? Is that?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's not.
I learned from. The game, the other slang for them was lobsterbacks.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really offensive for some reason.
That's pretty much all like history classes. Well, lobsterbacks. Yeah.
So they're the stormtroopers or the thuggies or the foot clan of the game.
Well, we need to get the Assassin's Creed universe to battle the thuggies, right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I mean, the thuggies didn't make a comeback. Those guys are glorious cannon fodder. So.
But the game's a lot of fun. You know, it's open world, so there's tons of stuff to explore. And
be a Tory? Can you choose that option at all? Like, can you go with the Redcoats?
Not in the main game. I haven't experimented with the multiplayer yet, so maybe multiplayer. But
okay.
In the main game, you're just playing your assassin guy.
Now, one criticism I did hear is they kind of Forrest Gump the history, right? Where Connor is pivotal in, you know, like different major American Revolution stuff. Like, I don't know if he helps Paul Revere out or something, but do they weave him in?
That's true. Yeah. He's kind of there for everything, but you know, well, that's kind of the fun of the game though, isn't it? You know, the fantasy of it.
Does he play ping pong like Forrest Gump?
There is games in the game. You can like go to the taverns and play games with people, like board games, like game within the game. But no ping pong, though.
That's what I always liked about Red Dead Redemption is that you could go in and play Texas Hold'em.
Right. Which I always lost at.
Yeah, you know, but at least you can play.
I guess so. I lost.
But yeah, you're there at the Battle of Lexington and Concord, which is funny because, you know, I work near Concord, and so it's funny seeing it in the game.
I know.
Got some skin in the game.
And yeah, you meet George Washington. And there's Paul Revere's in there. But there's a lot of other stuff too. There's a whole section of the game that's a jailbreak where you're in jail and you have to escape. And so it's really deep. So I'm really digging it.
Yeah, very good. Now, rumor has it there's an Assassin's Creed movie kicking around. I think Michael Fassbender's attached to that right now, right?
That's the rumor, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a small name, so we'll see what they do with that.
I don't know. I don't know what they can do in a movie that's going to top the game, because the game is so immersive, but we'll see.
Well, if we know anything about video game movie adaptations, don't underestimate them, Mac.
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers, the movie, was... God,
it's just
the
glorious.
The pinnacle.
Absolutely. Absolutely glorious. And this is coming from somebody who saw Mortal Kombat in the theater 4 times. All right. Anything else, Mac?
Let's see. Oh, I also saw Argo. We'll keep it short. But
I saw that too.
There you go.
It was really good.
Yeah. Okay.
It just hurts to watch Ben. It just hurts me to think about Ben Affleck. Doing things like that. It's hard for me to, I mean, it might be good. I accept that, but it hurts me to think about spending money to watch something that he's involved with.
Did he kill one of your pets?
Spiritually, he killed all of my pets.
I'm curious now. I mean, Ben Affleck, I could see, I mean, maybe did you see Gigli or something? I mean, what's the
it's
actual
Gigli,
problem?
Daredevil. It's this look on his face. It's the whole bit. It's the whole bit. I've been able to get over my Matt Damon problem.
See, you know. I've reversed the trajectory. Like, huh? I've grown to embrace Ben Affleck and to spurn Matt Damon after what he did to the Bourne movies. Yeah, so, but like, I've become more appreciative of Ben Affleck, I think. So,
it's
just,
it's hard for me. It's hard for me. It's not quite Tom Cruise level, but, you know, hard for me.
That's not saying Daredevil did not blow.
Clearly it did.
Yeah, clearly it did, so. All right. Well, Daryl, why don't we segue into...
There hasn't been a ton, even in these 2 weeks. I've been, irritated by Community's, February premiere date, apparently.
I feel like I saw on Twitter that they just shot the finale.
Yeah, they've shot the whole
thing. The whole thing's gonna be done, the light's gonna be turned off, everyone's gone home before it even airs.
Yeah. It's just frustrating. The one thing that I've watched in the last couple of weeks that I can recommend to certain audiences is in the States it's called the Snowtown Murders. But it's an Australian movie called Snowtown, because apparently the Australians don't need to be reminded about the murders.
Gotcha, right.
But it's about Australia's most notorious serial killer and his group. It's the closest thing to Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer that I've ever seen since then. It's ridiculously affecting. Incredibly well acted, especially by the main guy, who is absolutely penetrating. It's an amazing movie. It's just incredibly hard to recommend to anybody. It's so bleak and so tough, but yeah. Golly, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I saw that on Netflix a couple months ago, and I'm with you in that it's affecting, and I think the Henry comparison is that were you bothered by how kind of abstract and ambiguous it is? Or
not really. I mean, I think they were trying. I think they were trying the they were doing the right thing because they're speaking to an Australian audience, I think primarily.
Sure. And they're drunk anyway, so
right,
right, gotcha.
but the performances were just so outstanding. And he's one of the main killer is the only real professional actor in the movie. But the whole picture from the first moments, and I to back up for a second, it had been recommended to me by a couple of people. Whose opinions I respect about these things. And then I reviewed a movie, and I don't remember what it was, but before the movie there was a trailer for it. And after it had been recommended to me, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, God, I know what I'm in for now. But I had to watch it because I was going to see the person, one of the people who had recommended it to me in a few days later. And I knew what I was in for, it was exactly what I thought it would be, but that didn't take away from how well it worked for me. It's abstract. It doesn't give you the whole story. It doesn't give you a resolution as far as like the killers being caught and all of that stuff. It just leaves you hanging, and that's, I think, kind of the point.
Yeah, it's very atmospheric and kind of suggestive of what it would be like to be kind of caught up in that madness. Because it's after I watched it, I went and I read, you know, about the actual case. And this is essentially a case where you had this one kind of charismatic guy at the center of a whole group of people who committed these murders.
Yeah.
In a neighborhood. And they're like people who are related to each other and friends and hangers-on who kind of got sucked into this thing. And I'm glad they told it the way they did, because it kind of catches the spirit of it without being a strict, you know, by the numbers historical representation, you know, reenactment.
It's not really a story arc. There's basically no story arc in there. It's the scenario that actually happened, at least to a certain degree, and it lets you hang with trying to absorb that. It puts you in the center of it. It makes you part of it. And that's as disturbing as anything.
Well, sounds like a good pick-me-up in time for the holidays.
it's the least pick-me-up I've seen in a long, long
time. And that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot.
It is saying a lot.
You've reeled off some real winners over the past couple months, and that's got to be a real soul-crusher.
Well, yeah, comparing something to Henry Porter of a Serial Killer, which is one of my favorite movies, but also the movie I'm most afraid of in the whole world, it's not without merit. It's really a brilliant movie. It's just hard.
All right, Eric.
I'll pick up a little bit on what you're talking about with Snowtown. I'm actually gonna combine what you had to say with what Mac had to say, and I'm gonna talk about Argo just a little bit because I think it's worth talking about. I actually went to the movies last weekend. I did not see Skyfall because my wife did not want to see Skyfall, even though I wanted to see Skyfall. That's fine. I love my wife. So we actually saw a couple. We actually saw a couple movies on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
On Saturday we went to the movies twice, which never happens.
Jeez, would you misplace the kids?
And neither one was.
Our daughter was staying with her grandparents, so we had a fun time. So, so we went in the afternoon. We went and saw Wreck-It Ralph, which was a lot of fun. I really liked it.
Does it appeal more towards video game sympathetic people, would you say?
I think that if you kind of are aware and well versed in the history of video games, you'll pick up on a lot of stuff. There are a lot of licensed characters, and you know, those of us who grew up in the 80s will, you know, find you get even more out of it. I think as far as a family/kids animated movie, it's probably skews a little bit younger than Pixar and some of the jokes, but the performances are great. It's beautiful. You know, if you like video games, you can get kind of even more out of it, and I think it's worth seeing. It's good. And then in the evening we saw Argo, and I think it's interesting to talk about the Snowtown murders, because there you have kind of a reenactment of historical events that's done in an abstract way that doesn't spell everything out, and then you have Argo, which is kind of almost a too literal translation of what happened. And I liked Argo. I think that it is a good movie, and I watched it, you know, knowing it had gotten a lot of great reviews. I think that as far as Ben Affleck goes, he is a good director. I think it's a very well-directed movie, and weirdly enough, a very well-edited movie. I don't know, Mac, you probably picked up a lot of the kind of clever transitions between scenes and events. If I had a criticism of the movie, it would be that it's so desperate to get all the facts right that it kind of gets a little bogged down in the minutiae. It's basically the story of this takes place during the Iranian hostage crisis in 1980, when the Iranian mob stormed the U.S. embassy, six people escaped, and they hid out in the Canadian ambassador's home, and they basically stayed there, hiding from the Iranians for a long time. I would say like 79 or 80 days before the CIA got involved to try to extract them. And the way they ended up doing it was by coming up with this cover story that they're making they're scouting locations for a science fiction movie called Argo. And so they actually had these Hollywood people get involved, and they created fake posters and fake promotional materials and had a script and all this stuff just to kind of set up a cover so they could pretend that these six people were involved in the production and get them out. And there's and so I think in that regard, it's an interesting kind of political historical thriller. I was kind of taken aback at the very end of the movie, just kind of show how kind of literally Ben Affleck wants to kind of tell the story. Over the end credits, there are a series of photographs side by side. One is of a character or a scene in the movie, and one is of a real person or a real photograph that was taken at the time. And you see just how detail-oriented he is, that this person looks like this person, or we created this event showing the, you know, the burning of the American flag, and here's an actual press photo. And there's even one weird – Mac, did you stay through you watched all the credits when they – showed all the photos?
Right, yeah, I did.
And there's one where these shows, I don't know the history of the Hollywood sign, but the Hollywood sign was like partially collapsed, and I guess it was restored at some point. I should probably know.
It was
know.
Like a fire or something. Yeah.
So he shows a picture of the Hollywood sign in disrepair that they showed in the movie next to an actual picture of the Hollywood sign in disrepair from the time. And they're basically identical photographs. And I have no idea why he wanted to show that, other than to point out, look how accurate I was in making this movie exactly, you know, the way it was supposed to be. So I think it's...
How does that grab you, Daryl?
Not much.
How does that Ben Affleck trivia moment grab you?
Not much. There's a lot of people who can work that stuff out for him. I am unbending in my hate.
Oh, you are. Oh, boy, you are.
At least so far. I'll see Argo eventually. It's just partially it stars him. And that bothers me.
Speaker reports, I think he's not the greatest performer in the movie by a long shot, but he does a good job. You know, Wreck-It Ralph and Argo are both good movies. I don't think either of them are spectacular.
You know what's spectacular? Skyfall.
Skyfall, just very quickly, because it's Bond month or whatever, and yes. I do want to travel. And I had this gaping hole in my, you know, movie history where I'd never really watched a ton of James Bond movies. I'm trying to catch up right now. So over the past like 2 weeks, I've watched, 8 or 9 James Bond movies.
A lot of them for the first time.
I just, for whatever reason, I didn't grow up watching them. They were kind of, for a long time, they were on in the background because they were always on TBS.
Yes.
I never actually sat down like, watch them in their entirety. So I'm seeing a lot of this for the first time, and it's kind of weird. I mean, there's a lot of it that I love, the, you know, the gadgets and the general spyness and even the humor, but he is a real dick to women.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's amazing to watch it in 2012 eyes to see just how it's the disregard James Bond has for the women he sleeps with. He'll know that a woman is a mole and then sleep with her anyway. He'll slap one woman on the butt and then go have sex with someone else, and they love it. It's amazing. I get to, it reminds me a little bit of shots in James Bond movies. Every woman who's around James Bond is checking him out. It doesn't matter. It's just he's so desirable. They just see him from across the room.
They kind of dialed that back. I mean, I think between Connery and Roger Moore, those guys were the horniest Bonds. Actually, George Lazenby was the absolute horniest Bond.
Yeah, he was a pretty horny Bond.
I mean, there was that one sequence in Majesty's Service where he just kind of made the rounds in that sex kilt.
Just even the set of sex kilt is amazing.
Yeah, so that was pretty rough. And then I remember there was, like, Connery would just be banging, you know, women from the hotel who'd come to change his covers, you know? Like, they would sit down, he'd cozy up to her, and there's that. And then Roger Moore, of course, just, you know, anything that moved. But they really dialed that down post-Moore. I mean, Dalton, yeah. You know, Dalton was focused more on dislocating bad guys' spinal columns than anything else, you know?
Yeah, Dalton was violent, and Pierce Brosnan was a little bit more horny than
Pierce Brosnan did get a little horny. But at least it sort of made, like, in those days, it was just kind of like shoehorned in there, it seemed. It's like, oh, you gotta get him. So, I mean, Brosnan was horny, but you know what they did? They kind of played around with that Brosnan. They at least, even in GoldenEye, they at least kind of talked about, you know, that there might be some pathology connected to that, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that was a little more self-aware. Like,
they
mostly
dialed that back with Daniel Craig.
Absolutely, yeah.
Although Skyfall goes back a little bit, but we won't go there right now.
Yeah, we won't.
I take a hard stance on this. It's just bizarre to see. I watched On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which has, you know, a large part of that movie is about this, you know, supposedly affecting love story between him and Emma Peel. No, what's her name? That's her thing.
I'll get it. Diana Rigg.
There's so many women. You know, and there's a whole sequence in the middle. He's just going around sleeping with everybody.
Yeah, that's a weird movie. Like, to me, that's
sex cult. What are you gonna do?
Sex cult. I mean, you're a problem. Majesty's a weird movie. It's got like a fantastic sustained action scene at the end. It's like legitimately great stuff. But it's just really sandwiched by a lot of weird goofiness. Like, I hated the pre-credit sequence in that movie. Like, the sped-up beach fight, terrible. And then the little wink and the nod, you know, hey, at least I'm not the other guy. Shut up. You and your dimpled chin.
It's like explosions and a few less pizza deliveries from being like a porn movie. Like, it's basically...
Yeah.
Like, just stop and have sex. It's really amazing. I did watch License to Kill, and I like that one a lot.
Oh,
and
it's fantastic.
At least in that movie, there's the two women, but he actually cares about the feelings of the one woman he ends up with at the end.
I just like it that he throws bad guys in big fridges full of maggots. I mean, James Bond
really
just to the bad guys in like the most gruesome, just gruesomely horrific ways in that movie. So, we could talk about Bond forever. So,
my tour of James Bond has been a very educational one. So,
very nice. Boy, I think I'll spend most of my I'll forward the balance of my time to the rest of the podcast because pretty much Skyfall is all I have to report on, unless you want me to regale you with tales of Chips 99.
Oh, please.
It's their road. It's their rules, Daryl. So I will take this as a segue into the stuff we've been doing for the site. But, yeah, so one of these things is TNT did a made-for-TV movie, essentially a reunion movie, of Chips in 1998. Larry Wilcox, Eric Estrada are back on tooling around on the motorcycles for some reason, even though they're 50. There's Hotshot Rookies and really terrible blue screen work with Eric Estrada hanging onto a wire from a helicopter.
Nice.
And he's flown around the skyline, so that's pretty odd. There's one, my favorite one. And like, what they do is they actually do picture-in-picture flashbacks to the TV show for some
reason. Really?
Yeah. Like, so it's like real weirdly meta or whatnot. But there's this one scene where, Ponch and Baker, right? Baker, that's his name. John Baker, they kind of reconnect and, hey, how's it going, buddy? And then all of a sudden they hear some commotion and there's some cyclist, just a guy riding a bike who's not yielding. He's running stop signs. He's flying across the freeway and people are braking and nearly killing themselves in car accidents. So they jump on the motorcycles and take after this guy. You know, they chase him down, a little bit of a chasing, and they catch up to him. They look at him and then a flashback kicks in to a scene from the series where they're talking to some six-year-old kid learning to ride his bike for the first time, and it's that guy grown up.
Wow.
And they laugh, and they have a hearty chuckle, and I think they let him go, even though he nearly caused the deaths of so many.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That sounds really genuinely awful.
It's genuinely.
Did Ben Affleck direct this?
Ben Affleck directed it, yes. You know who directed it? See, I think this is who we're thinking of. John Kasser, who is one of the directors for 24.
Oh, wow.
I believe. John Kasser directed this. So, yeah. So there you go. But, oh, and I mean, you know you're dealing with some rough stuff when, you know, who is listed in the credits and the back of the disc? Judge Judy Shineland. I'm kidding you not. There's an entire
sequence. Needs to be in more movies.
There's an entire sequence where Eric Ponch accompanies Baker to a Judge Judy episode. Baker is suing his neighbor because his dog
really
is on his lawn, and I'm not making that up.
That's insane. That's insane.
That is not made up. So, yeah. So Chips 99. Deal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, Mac, what have you been working on?
Let's see, reviews for the site. Talk about the 1970s. I got a real relic here from the old Saturday morning days. It's the live-action series of Shazam.
Ah, yes.
I have requested that and did not
see. Well, if you want to borrow it, I've got it right here.
Nah, I can live without it.
So it's the 70s, and young Billy Batson and his mentor, whose name is Mentor, traveling around the country in their motorhome, and whenever there's trouble, like, you know, some little kid runs away from home or is tempted with peer pressure, Billy says the word Shazam, and he transforms into Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel saves the day by...
How many episodes?
28 episodes.
And that's the complete series?
Complete series was two seasons.
Okay.
Two different actors playing Captain Marvel.
Oh, good.
So 28 episodes comprises what specifically?
Two seasons of this show.
That's like a quarter of a season of He-Man.
Yeah.
Well, this was a live-action show.
Oh, okay, nice. Wasn't there a cartoon? Wasn't there a Shazam cartoon?
There was also a Shazam cartoon.
Yeah. I think that's the one I watched way back when.
So they really did a lot of with Shazam in the 70s. I guess it was after DC got purchased the rights. A lot of legal battles with this character behind the scenes, but the show is really cheesy and really stodgy. It's like, you know, Captain Marvel, he's Earth's mightiest hero, and he can fly, and he has super strength, and he's lightning powers, and all he ever does is just, you know, and rescue some kid when the kid falls into the dry riverbank, or, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And they're always visiting.
Something his dad could do.
Right. They're always visiting campgrounds and, you know, truck stops and, you know, all this.
If you're making truck stops, a lot seedier than I think.
That sounds true.
And you know, all these sort of back roads places, you know, and. I mean, if you're making Route 66, that's fine, but this is a superhero epic, and why isn't he visiting cities? Why isn't he fighting giant robots? But now he's teaching kids to, you know, stay in school.
Because this truck stop's a hot spot for various reasons.
Yeah,
that's right.
Listen, son, when you urinate, make sure your urine goes into the bowl of the truck stop.
One episode has a villain who's just some scummy drug dealer. Was pushing like drugs on the kids, and I was so excited because, oh my gosh, there's finally a villain on this show.
Yeah, well, some antagonist other than malaise, youth malaise,
other than the temptation to run away from home,
or climb into a refrigerator that's been discarded. It's beyond the danger.
Oh, why didn't they do that? Would have been perfect.
I know.
He could have used his awesome strength to like open the refrigerator.
Open the fridge.
Ah, Shazam!
Oh, get out of there.
All right, sounds like a winner. Daryl, how about you?
Keeping with the 70s theme, I got two things. The original Gone in 60 Seconds.
All right.
Which before I actually never realized was a remake, when the 2000 one came out, that it was actually a remake. Has some of the most ridiculous car crashes. This was made in 73 or 74, 73. But some of the most ridiculous car crashes that I've ever seen, all done live. And if you're looking for straight up car porn,
yeah,
there is basically nothing better than this 73 Gone in 60 Seconds.
Nice, really.
The main car, it's a 40-minute chase scene at the end of the movie, and spoiler alert, because it's all chase. At one point, this 73 Mustang fastback gets clipped in the rear going 85 miles an hour and spins out and knocks out a light pole on the highway. And it is no crap. Like, it knocks out that light pole.
Nice.
And it basically shows you what it is to get in a wreck at 90 miles an hour. And it's dangerous. And the guy that directed the movie, the guy that directed the movie is the guy that was in the car, is the guy that distributed the movie, like it's old school independent filmmaking, and is really dangerous.
Nice.
And it's not a good movie. It's not even a movie. It's just car porn. But it's fun as hell. It's fun as hell.
Now, in a similar, similar to that, actually, in Chips 99.
Okay.
There's this scene where Ponch and Baker are involved in a hot pursuit on their bikes, and as they're riding, there are two ramps, motorcycle-sized ramps in the middle of the freeway for no reason, and they hit the ramps, and also for no reason, some pyrotechnics erupt below them as they hit the ramps.
Nice.
And that is it. It's never explained why there are these pyrotechnic-laden ramps in the middle of the California freeway.
Yeah, this is going for more of a realist feel.
Okay.
and it really works. Like, cars get pounded like crazy, and this 73 Fastback just gets destroyed.
So now is it up there as far as stuntmen, you know, risking their lives in the name of vehicular mayhem with The Road Warrior? Because that is the one where I fear for the lives of people legitimately.
I am shocked that nobody died during or got seriously hurt during the filming of this movie. Now, the director, the driver, Toby Halicki, actually did get killed on set of Gone in 60 Seconds 2. Had a water tower fall on him.
Oh, geez.
Oddly. Yes. This was in like 1989 or something. I don't know. Something like that. It is shocking when you see all these wrecks that nobody got seriously injured. It is shocking.
Cause they just really filmed it like on the fly.
Yeah. Well, they figured out that the permit guy didn't work on Sundays.
Oh, is that real?
Real, yeah. That's what the documentaries and stuff on the DVD describe, that he didn't work on Sundays, so they just go out onto the freeway and they're going down railroad tracks. They're driving on the sidewalk. The pedestrians you see that are jumping out of the way are honestly jumping out of the way, apparently.
Oh, excellent.
Because there's some car riding up on the damn sidewalk, and it's just really dangerous feeling filmmaking, and you know, you can't really argue with that. And ultimately, you know, there's no plot. I mean, there's a plot, I guess, but it's pretty worthless. Really, it's a question of seeing crazy ass wrecks. And if you want that, yeah, Gone in 60 Seconds is
excellent. That's a ringing endorsement.
It is. It's a great movie. You should definitely check out The Junk Man. Is Halicki's other big.
Yeah, it was on the disc. They have a bunch of clips. Like, it's basically all of his other movies are boiled down to the chase scenes.
Oh,
and which is appropriate. And they show some of that stuff. And yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like a lot of fun. Oh. Yeah, it's mindless, you know, car crashes. But God, you know, this is people putting their asses on the line.
Nice.
For this thing, so ringing endorsement on that. The other thing, not such a ringing endorsement, but it did take me back to my childhood, was a series of television movies, 8 of them, called Hawkins with Jimmy Stewart. This is from 73, I think, as well. It's basically Matlock, and it's pretty worthless as far as lawyer television shows are concerned, but if anything ever reminded me of Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer,
yes,
it is that. Every single episode, there's some kind of garbage about where he goes into a thing about, well, I'm just a small town lawyer and I don't understand your big city ways, but what I do understand is this guy is innocent or whatever the hell it is. I couldn't have been more reminded of Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer in every single episode. So in my review that's coming, I'm going to try to limit my Phil Hartman jokes, but we'll see how successful I actually am in that.
Very nice. All right. Embrace the Phil Hartman jokes if you have to.
Yeah, I probably will.
All right, Eric?
Boy, nothing this week specifically, but we've been off for a while, so should have something. sure was the classic album series episode about the Peter Gabriel album So, which is an album I like a lot and I think deserves a second listen beyond just that song that John Cusack plays from the boombox he holds.
but what a scene.
It is, and it's a great song. It's a great album. So I recently got the picked up the 25th anniversary remastered version, and there is a lot going on. It took like almost a year to make that album, and unfortunately, an hour-long episode of a series about making albums, even one as good as the classic album series, can't quite contain it all, but it's still pretty fascinating, so worth checking out.
All right, nice. Mac, bring us to the next phase.
Yeah, we are going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you folks at home can follow along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the DVD releases tab, and there we can scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for November 20th. We'll just talk about what we see on the list here.
Now, all the way to the left, three rows down, this movie showed up on our request list this week, and I was laughing out loud. So, right underneath Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Comeback, there, right at the top. Yeah, it's a little Japanese movie. And I'm wondering if that's the literal translation of what the original Japanese title is. Yeah, so I was, for some reason I was laughing out loud, and I said,
Japanese, I think it's actually like super serious zombie adventure story.
Yeah, probably.
Let's see.
Big Hollywood release of the week has got to be Expendables 2.
That's right.
Seems like I just saw that.
Well, that was not... that long ago that was in the theaters, yeah. I think.
Kind of a mixed bag. It had some fun scenes, but overall a little unimpressive.
Well, the big release of the week looks like to be the re-release of Psycho Kickboxer.
Nice. You can finally get a copy.
Yeah, well, except, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand what happened. So the original release, you get it for dirt cheap. I think Dan Mancini got it for $4 shipped. So I don't know how this, for $20, I don't see any used options.
It's a double feature.
It is a double feature. The same thing. It's the same exact thing.
Okay.
Is he kicking Rama? They always overprice.
Is he kicking a guy's head off on the cover art?
Yeah, it's not terribly far. It's not far away from what actually transpired. What a great movie. I don't know.
And today we got more Power Rangers for you. Season 1, Volume 2.
Season 1, Volume 2. Yeah. All right. I did put in a request for the complete series, so.
Well, that's your two huge box sets.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to do this thing. You know, nothing really breaks writer's block better than Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I think. And that, by the way, that is not how the Yellow Ranger looks in the TV show on that cover. Do not. That is false advertising. The Yellow Ranger in the TV show does not have a slight frame or breasts.
No. It is a boy.
It is a man, yes. It is a packaged man. There's no getting around it.
Tarantino, they've collected a bunch, I think most of his movies, the Blu-ray releases on the Tarantino XX box set. It looks pretty snazzy. Cover.
Wow, it almost looks like Robert Pattinson for a second.
You're fooled. Not Robert Pattinson.
It's not. Well, that's about it for me. I don't see anything.
Yeah, there's not a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably watch this Criterion Eclipse when Horror came to Shochiku or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, Puppet Master 3 is probably my favorite thing on this list.
How about the Ginger Dead Man? And there's three of them, actually.
Yeah. That's a franchise?
Ginger Dead Man 2, The Passion of the Crust. So it was Ginger Dead Man Crucified. So there you go.
Just tasteful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't look very scary.
It doesn't look very anything. All right. Well, I do know that a quick glance reveals a few inadvertently sounding TV releases of the week. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right, I'm going to steal everybody else's and go for the obvious with Ramrod.
And you win. Mm-hmm. Daryl?
Well, I'm going to go with something that I found pretty much equally obvious in Backroad.
That's good, too. That's good, too. Eric?
I think I'm going lowbrow with this one. Sorry. Mommy is coming.
Oh, that's rough.
Yes, indeed.
Good stuff. All right, I'll just go with Bringing Up Bobby. So that is mine. All right. Before we leave this, Ancient Aliens, what is that TV show about? It seems like every week it's being released on something about Ancient Aliens is being released, it seems like. Anyone ever seen any Ancient Aliens? Like,
it's one of those UFO documentary shows.
That many Ancient Aliens?
Yeah, exactly. How do you create a season out of this thing?
Four seasons.
How do you do that?
There's a lot of historical events, Dave, and I'm sure aliens were involved in all of them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Exactly.
Okay, time for ambush topics, random topics toss at each other. You know how this works. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right, well, we've been gone for 2 weeks. We've been away, so with our big comeback here, wanted to do something really special. So we've got our special guest star here.
The Force and its wisdom are all around us. Ask your will a yes or no question. Sense the Force in my left hand. Press it and answer you, I will.
All right.
And so we got Yoda is back on the show, so... Yeah, ask Yoda a yes or no question.
Is the new upcoming Disney-powered Star Wars movie going to be any good?
Yes, I said this is.
Oh.
Wow, look at that.
Corporate Yoda might be biased, though.
Yoda's a corporate flack.
Who else has a question for Yoda?
Just Terrell, I don't think Terrell's aware of questions, and Yoda will answer them.
Yeah, you ask Yoda a yes or no question, he'll answer.
We've done these a couple times before, so I don't think...
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Did you feel humiliated fighting Christopher Lee?
Even Yoda cannot see.
Okay.
Evasive answer there.
Because yes.
Is Ben Affleck going to direct episode 8?
Oh, nice.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Oh, I sense this is.
Uh-oh. Mm. He's too busy on Justice League, I guess. Let's see here. What can I ask? What are Ben Affleck's chances to get the Oscar for Best Director this year?
The answer you seek is yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yoda, do you have an inflamed prostate?
Yes, I sense this is.
He senses it.
If that's you, bud.
Middle of the night.
Yoda, are you addicted to online pornography?
The answer you seek is yes.
I knew it.
Does James Bond have more than 100 illegitimate children?
Yes, I feel this will be.
You're saying yes to everything.
You're saying yes to everything.
<It's> my-
Hey, Yoda, if your eyes say no... Your body says?
Yes.
I think I butchered that anyway. Do you think the Psycho Kickboxer can make a suitable Jedi?
The answer you seek is no.
Uh-oh.
Oh, poor guy.
Screw you, Yoda. Screw you.
What about Psycho Pinhead?
Kickboxer doesn't have the Pinhead? Does Pinhead make a good Jedi?
The answer you seek is no.
Yeah.
Oh, now he's gone negative on us.
Yeah, what a jerk.
Jerk. Do you think the Yellow Ranger is a boy or a girl? Oh, no. Is the Yellow Ranger a boy?
Strong I am with the Force. Not that strong to see the answer.
Yoda is blind as a bat.
Well, that stock footage goes by awfully fast. It's, yeah, that's, it's, not it's all fast. Blurry and grainy.
Not that fast. Not that fast. All right, one more question for Yoda. Anybody?
Let's see.
Jump on in.
Yoda, are you a Scientologist?
You must feel the Force around you. The answer then clear will become.
Oh, what a
the answer is you clearly yes. Answer.
Yeah, clearly yes. Clearly.
Yeah,
clearly
he's all those yes, Hollywood then. Types. So.
Nice. Thank you, Yoda. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, that confused me for a second, I guess.
That's true. <I'm>
sorry.
True ambush topic. So let's build on that confusion, Daryl. Why don't you go next?
I'm going to go with just something simple that's based on some stuff that I have, something I've been watching a little bit lately. television shows that start good and turn out wind up abysmal. Just, you know, where the decline is just ridiculous.
Start good and bad and poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
All right, I got it. It's Airwolf for me, and I think that's...
Really?
Oh, I mean...
Yeah.
Season one is just pristine Soviet face-punching. You know, it's fantastic. And exceeded my nostalgia when I first reviewed it. But then season three or four, whatever season, when USA took it over and they had zero budget to work with and they couldn't even license the helicopter. So
right. Oh, that's right.
They had to recycle old footage and do some really terrible, like really proto CGI work. And it was, yeah, so the quality between Airwolf season one and season four, I think it is season four, it's an abomination.
Right, I'm going to go with a favorite of the podcast. I'm going with 24.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been seasons of 24. It basically became something for me to make fun of.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that gimmick just became ridiculous eventually.
Yeah, flog at the end. I can't remember a lot of the stuff at the end, to be honest with you.
So. A lot of that last season, it was like hardly any Jack Bauer. It was all the other characters.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
The last season was at least a step up.
Hearing your mind, yeah, are you?
Yoda. Okay. Yoda has something to chime in on that.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Let's see. Boy, Heroes sure did crash and burn.
Oh, that's a great call. First season had something going, you know?
The first season was really exciting. The characters were really likable. There was a lot of fun to be had. They were really building up this really fascinating mythology, and then it was just House of Cards just all came crashing down.
Everyone you kind of liked just became incredibly irritating, like Hero and his friend or whatever, you know. And I think signs of that at the end of the first, because I thought the first season ended really weakly. Like, it was just a weak ending, and I think that kind of paved the way for what was to come. And I reviewed the third season, I was just like, what is going on here? Like, there's a carnival, and, like, the guy, Teabag from Prison Break, starts earthquakes with his hands and stuff. It's
right. And they kept, like, doing, like, plot twist after plot twist after plot twist, and it just got exhausting, you know? Yeah. It's like, you know, these two characters are really long-lost brothers, but then two episodes later, no, they're not. That was, you know, a fake-out, and it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. That is probably the correct answer, because that was rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. So... I will go with the reason why I brought it up, because I reviewed season 5 of this, or I guess I reviewed season 6 of this, and was basically disgusted and never went back to it. But now I have been going back to The Office to finish it out, because it's on Netflix now and it's easy to watch. The first 4 seasons of that show are basically brilliant. Charming, nice. Funny and fairly uncomfortable. By the time and where I'm at right now at the end of season 8, it is one of the most unwatchable shows that I've seen on television in a long time.
Now, where are we currently? Season 8 or season 9?
This is season 9 currently.
Yeah, last season was unwatchable. This season is also unwatchable. Though there were some moments last week, but it's rough.
It's plainly unwatchable. They've reset their characters. Not all of them, but there's this new influx of characters, and none of them makes sense. None of it makes sense. It's like a mad grab for ratings before it finally dies, and it's just absurd. It's absurdly terrible. I'm really shocked. I mean, I didn't like season 6, but that's a gem compared to what season 8 is.
Yeah. Can't argue with anything you said there. Yeah.
Disgusting.
All right. On that cheerful note, I'll go next. We were talking about this a little bit, but and we probably have done this ambush topic before, but tis the season. So your favorite nonsensical, very special episode. I mean, you could probably do this whole just if you did Saved by the Bell, obviously.
Oh. Well, sure.
Nonsensical, huh?
I mean, I don't know, loosely, but just really dopey and maybe just doesn't fit with the show. And it could be, you've got some latitude here. So if it's a holiday special, that's fine too, but
Right, here's what didn't really fit with the tone of the show. I'm going to go to Alf.
Ah, the old standby, yes.
Where one of Willie's college friends came to visit, and it turned out that she had become an alcoholic.
Oh.
Now, this was during the 80s when everyone had the alcoholic special episode. Family Ties had it with Tom Hanks, and this one had it with this woman. And, yeah, she would, like, get drunk, and Alf had to, like, talk. I think either talk to Willie or talk to her, but he... that was a bit odd, so.
Mm. That's a good one.
This is a tough one. I know there are a lot out there, but I'm just trying to come up with the right one.
Yeah, there's a ton. It depends on what you want to go with for very special episodes.
I mean, geez, every episode of Shazam was a very special episode.
Okay. Oh, yes, of course. let's see.
They kind of did this on Ben 10. They did one episode. They sort of stopped the ongoing plot to do it like an environmental message. So that was kind of weird. It's those big sort of man-made islands out in the middle of the oceans. It's just made up of pollution, which is a real thing, actually. But Ben and our heroes went and visited one, and they were having their sci-fi adventures, and they were fighting aliens and stuff, but then everything grinds to a halt where they have to stop and talk about how pollution is bad. And I'm like, really? I expected better from the show. Not that pollution isn't bad, because it is bad, but, you know, it's just it's that sort of in-your-face moralizing was just too out of place.
So I'm going to go with something way back, and I might be misremembering some of this stuff, but there's an old Brady Bunch episode where one of the kids claims he's dying so that he can meet Joe Namath.
Okay. Nice.
I don't remember. Bobby, I think it might be.
Sounds like a South Park episode.
Yeah, and Joe Namath's on the show, and there was this brief period of time that I watched the Brady Bunch. Obviously, I'm not old enough for actual first runs of the show, but there was a brief time where I watched it like it was going out of style. And this episode came up 3 or 4 times, and it always amazed me because Joe Namath is such a fool. I guess the very special episode was The Dangers of Lying.
Oh, very good.
But Joe Namath still showed up and threw the football around with him.
So it paid off then, pretty much.
So it paid off. So lying is good. And, you know, so it's a very special episode about how lying actually works.
All right. another show that has a ton of stuff to choose from would be 21 Jump Street, but moralizing was kind of woven into that. So I'm going to go with a little something called the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special. just pretty crazy. Hordak sends a rocket, and the rocket loses its trajectory, and that's going to go blow up She-Ra or something. Lands on Earth. Two children end up in the rocket with Orko somehow. They come back to Eternia. They share the joy of the Earth Christmas special, or the Earth Christmas holiday with the king and queen, and Hordak is still trying to do something, but the real payoff is when Skeletor teams up with He-Man to fight back Hordak, and this is a direct quote, actually. Wait, what is a strange feeling coming over me? And that is Skeletor referring to him being overtaken by the Christmas spirit.
So there's very nice.
There is a moment where Skeletor just gets all warm and fuzzy, and he smiles at He-Man because he's overtaken.
Real softy under those bones.
Real softy under that. That's probably just cartilage, though.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Skeletor get a puppy in that episode?
He does, I believe. Yeah. If he does get a puppy. I reviewed this in 2006, and I actually went back to take a look at that. But he does. That's right. Thanks to the goodwill of the kids, plus the undeniable charm of a puppy, dog thing. I guess it was the equivalent of an attorney and puppy. Old Boneface softens up and even takes a time out from his relentless bitching to do some good. He saves the kid, he smiles, which is legit, and the puppy licks him.
You're only finding nothing but bone. Which probably makes him really popular in the dog community.
Yeah, that's right. Like it's a ride. So there you go. It's pretty positive.
Every morning's buried in the backyard.
That's right. So the lesson from this special, don't go in spaceships with gender-ambiguous hovering wizards.
I think that's a life lesson in general for everybody.
Absolutely. Don't go in a spaceship with strangers.
You see Orko, just walk away.
Just walk away, yes.
Don't accept his candy. It's not good.
Don't go in a spaceship, young child. Do not do
it. Especially makes it sound almost exactly like Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Well, so,
what I, very similar, yeah.
All right. Eric, wrap it up.
All right. Sweet mustaches.
And Ron Swanson is not allowed. I'm going to strike him from the record. He has the sweetest mustache. He cannot go there.
I'll allow.
Okay. I'm going to stay in the He-Man Shira universe and go with my pal and yours.
Oh, Bo. No.
Man-at-Arms has a nice, bushy, manly one. Bo.
He does.
Spends his entire episode run being the most emasculated male in the universe. With his little cape and the heart on his chest, whereas it has this porn star mustache. It's very like this tiny pencil porn star mustache. Pretty odd. But it's pretty sweet.
Alright, I am going to go with Al Swearengen from Deadwood, Ian McShane's character. One of the most genuinely evil characters from television, and a real hell of a mustache.
No. Mac.
Hang on. Let's see. I got to Google this guy so I can get his name right. Let's see. Okay. I'm going to go back to anime, even though I said I was going to stop watching anime, for Bobo. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. He is this awesome kind of superhero guy who fights crime with his magic nostril hairs.
Of course.
He's got these super long hairs that come out of his nostrils, and he uses them like whips, and they can like turn into big arms with hands and smack the bad guys around, and he plays drums with them. And there's comics, there's anime, there's a bunch of video games all based on this guy. So he's a sensation overseas.
All right.
With him and his magic nostril hairs.
Could you say his name again?
Okay. It's basically just Bo repeated a bunch of times, but okay. It's all like hyphenated a certain way. So it's Bo.
All right. Excellent. All right. Eric. Wait, Dale, did you go? You did.
Swearengen.
All right. Eric, take us home.
Inspired by Argo, but I will not go with that. I will go with Harry Shearer's character, Derek Smalls, from This Is Spinal Tap.
Oh, good one.
That is excellent.
Very good. Very good.
Yes.
I thought you were going for Argo.
No. Now, did This Is Spinal Tap get a Blu-ray release?
Yep.
I don't think it has yet.
No, it does. I own it.
Oh, you do?
It
own
does?
It. Oh, okay.
Huh. Is it the same, like with the same commentary and all of that from the old DVD release?
So there's nothing new.
Yeah. Nothing new. Too bad. Ooh, look at that. It's only $8. Only $8 on Amazon. That might need to be gotten. So, fantastic. All right. Well, that is it for this. Well, not it. This is for this part of the Friday Filibuster. And so we'll bid farewell to Eric, and we'll talk some Skyfall. Sound good, gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sure. Eric, thanks for tuning in. And sorry this isn't the Wreck-It Ralph rear spoiler section.
Good night, Eric.
Okay, gentlemen, Skyfall. Let's go quick around the horn. Daryl, what were your thoughts?
Go ahead. I need to see it again to make a final judgment about it, the whole thing. And I'm not quite ready to call it my favorite Bond movie.
Well, even that it would be in a conversation is noteworthy.
But it kicked my ass. It was fun as hell on every level. And when it finally came down to it and Albert Finney showed up, caretaker of the yeah. Of the old state, Skyfall estate. Spoiler alert.
Yes.
I was completely on board from that point on, and then it became like sort of like this cross between like you were talking about it before with Home Alone,
badass
MacGyver.
Yeah.
It's just like you know, glass bombs and
shotguns,
you know,
and propane tanks, and
yeah, and it was phenomenal. And the little shout outs to other things. I wasn't such a huge fan of the reboot stuff at the very end.
See, I love that, man. I loved it.
Did you?
I was all about that stuff.
I got no problem with it, but I wasn't like it wasn't necessary for me. But it sure did wrap the thing up.
It was surprising to me just because Casino Royale was kind of this reboot, but it was just fascinating how, and I think Quantum at the very best was uneven, though I'm not a large Quantum of Solace fan at all. But it's kind of interesting how they kind of did this. It's like it was a reboot, but it was actually kind of leading into establishing a lot of the stuff you, so I don't know, I was really pleasantly surprised by that. So, yeah, totally agree with that. Mac, what are your thoughts?
I liked it a lot. I think, like Casino Royale, I mean, the reason everyone really likes that one, it has a lot of great action in it, but it also gives Bond some genuine character development.
Yeah.
And this one does that as well, taking it even further with giving us a deeper look into Bond's personal history than we've ever had.
And although it's basically The Dark Knight.
That's true.
Still works.
Right, right. True.
Yeah, there's a lot of comparisons can be made to Dark Knight. But that's fine.
But that just kind of tells you, like, how rich that kind of stuff is, you know? I mean,
yeah.
There's rich stuff in there, like the orphan, the damaged orphan, what drives a man to do this. I love that. You know, a lot of the old jokes with I think it was compelling in, like, even a contemporary kind of way. I mean, who can relate to Quantum of Solace? That's not grounded right. That's not grounded in jack crap, you know? It's like the old white man cabal communicating in the arena or whatever, and then some big set piece, a lot of fire at the end. But this one was legitimately interesting, and when they're talking about enemies in the shadows, I mean, it's like, yeah, right? I mean,
yeah.
So how does Bond fit into that? Does he have a role? You know, and I thought that asking that question alone was pretty interesting.
Ralph Fiennes as M is something I can get behind.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh,
totally.
That is something I can get
good
behind.
Good casting, completely. Absolutely, good casting. I mean, Judy, again, spoilery ahoy, Judy Dench buys it at the end. I thought it was genuinely emotional. Mm-hmm. You know, there was definitely some maternal stuff going on there.
Well, she's really good throughout the whole movie.
She's so good, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is why they retained her even post-reboot, right? You know,
right,
that kind of weird.
Yeah.
It was that weird, like, vestige from the Brosnan stuff. But, I mean, she's just too good, obviously. But to the point where it was a great, you know, it was a great send-off. And even as someone who's critical, like, yes, there wasn't a big fight scene between Silva and Bond, you know. You know, you kind of build yourself up for that. But it was such – I mean, Javier Bardem goes some crazy places at the end.
Oh, yeah. Silva's awesome. And they have great – him and Daniel Graham have great chemistry.
Yeah, so it's like great. A great villain. I love the fact – like I think my favorite Bond movies aren't the ones where there's the Hugo Draxes of the world. You know, with world domination, but just some whacked out, you know, whether it's License to Kill or just some cocaine drug lord that Bond is just pissed at, you know, and he just makes his mission to wreck him.
Right.
But, you know, Bardem here, I mean, he's, yeah, there's some kind of global implications to his malfeasance, but, you know, he's got his directive is pretty intimate. You know, so
yeah, he just wants out, and that's brilliant. I mean, that's enough. It doesn't need to be global domination. It doesn't need to be the end of the world. You know, he wants M, and M doesn't want to die. So there's your plot. That works. It works perfectly well.
And it was interesting how they kind of set up Silva as this mirror of Bond. You know, former badass agent who, you know, damaged as well. Probably, you know, made different decisions and got taken down this crazy path, which, again, calling back to The Dark Knight, you know, it's kind of like you kind of see that between Batman and the Joker almost, you know, two damaged, psychologically damaged individuals that follow their psychoses down different paths, you know. So I don't know, I just kind of like, I mean, that's maybe getting too into it, but I think that's just kind of a testament to the cool villain something that maybe they were flirting with Sean Bean's character in GoldenEye before just turning him into a standard issue take over the bad guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is basically, it's just simple revenge plot.
Yes, right.
But it's, Bardem makes it work because he's just so loony and he gives the character so much personality.
Right. I mean, I think, and to be fair, I mean, maybe you guys could tell me, like, I think there were some, like, gaps in logic. Like, it was such an, or such a complex plan that Silva put into place, but as far as I can tell, it was just, the end game was him just walking in dressed up as a cop, opening fire with a pistol.
Right. Yeah, I think ultimately that's a little bit disappointing because he could have just flown in and not dealt with all that.
I mean, I was expecting some, especially when it was kind of established how super powerful he was with all his computer hacking and whatnot. I mean, I guess he wanted a more intimate.
Right. He wanted to look M in the eye. You know, he wanted it to be face to face.
Yeah. So I think I just was expecting maybe a bigger kind of a bigger. Scheme, perhaps, but it's all right. I just kind of praised it for being smaller. So, I mean, it was a thrilling sequence, just the chase, the foot chase. It was all thrilling. It was just kind of like, oh, that was a scheme. And I just loved, and it was other interesting about that movie, aside from the opening credit sequence, which was, you know, deliriously awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
This was not a movie that was stacked with big action set pieces, you know? Like Casino Royale, you had three biggies, right? But this one, you had like one biggie. And something kind of at the end, there was. Yeah, I mean, you had a train obviously break through the ground and the helicopter.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Which was cool, but nothing like huge and sustained. I mean, the action at the end was just Bond just smoking guys, like you said, with frag grenades and shotguns and just, you know, badass.
M getting in the action.
Yeah, so there was like none of the, you know, super duper set pieces, but it was still. I thought, really exciting, really well moving, 2.5 hours, but zipped by like nothing.
Totally.
Right, because they maintain the sort of tension throughout the movie. Even though it's not constant punching and kicking, you're really, you know, excited to see what's going to happen next.
And they still manage to sneak in like those Bond stuff, and you referenced it, Daryl. Like, so there is that hot Bond girl, you know, boinks her in the shower, she gets wasted, you know, so there is that kind of thing.
Immediately afterwards, too.
Immediately after. And he's, you know, Bond is still kind of a waste of scotch. What a bad, you know, what a cold bastard he is. You know, but there's still lots of nods. There was some humor with the old car and the eject.
Yeah, the old Aston Martin was cool. And
Penn,
you know,
reference. Q was quirky and funny.
I've heard
there was a really
just
funny bit. Oh, sorry, Daryl, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
There's a really funny bit where Bond is fighting that guy in that pit with the, like, what were those things, iguanas? Or
oh, yeah, the huge-ass iguanas.
I was watching that, and I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, they're doing a Roger Moore Bond.
Absolutely. With, absolutely. And then he had a one-liner, you know, the circle of life.
Yeah, so it's like, well, we got about 10 minutes of good old Roger Moore in the middle of this. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought all that stuff was cool. There's been some people that I've talked to, you know, have speculated. There's no, it's not founded, and I hope it's not true. But the whole Albert Finney stuff, I've heard, you know, speculation.
It's supposed to be Sean Connery.
That it was supposed to be Sean Connery, and I hope that's not true.
No, that's not true. It was debunked. That was debunked.
Okay,
Sam Mendes himself said that was
okay. Happening. Okay, good. I mean, I hope that's. I mean, I don't want that to be true because that's just where that Roger Moore bit with the iguanas and stuff is a cool throwback. It's not direct fan service.
Right.
And that's
clever. That's why the movie's clever. Like they give you, like there's fan service to be had. You know, I mean, but it's done smartly. Like whatever you think of the Moneypenny stuff, that's a nice reveal. I mean, it's the same entrance that Connery used. I mean, that's M. I mean, that is M, you know? I mean, it was just kind of, you know, well done. And there's
well
a great
done.
Ending, too. Like, just I loved how, like, it really did seem like he became Bond, even though Casino Royale kind of said at the end, like, he's Bond or whatever. But
this set the tone for, like, if you wanted to imagine Daniel Graham in
– Daniel Craig.
Or Daniel Craig. Yeah, sorry. if you wanted to imagine Daniel Craig in Dr. No, you could.
Yeah.
You could at least imagine him there.
That's right. And he kind of has, you know, again, whatever. There's not much of Quantum Solace I remember. So I kind of just link right to Casino Royale, you know. But, like, it really does seem like Craig is kind of – or Bond, rather, kind of knows his role and he's comfortable with it. And I just love that little exchange where I said, you know, are you ready for your next assignment? You know, and Kirk says, you know, with pleasure, right? Is that how he ends it?
I believe so, yeah.
Something like that, right?
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, alrighty, let's do this thing. And then, I mean, I don't know about you guys, there's applause in my theater, which rarely happens, I have to be honest. You know, it rarely happens, but the people were into it that I was watching it with.
Yeah, there wasn't in mine, and I also had to deal with two of the most annoying talky women that I've ever sat next to. And I almost got in a fight with them. Well, didn't really almost get in a fight, but they were really mad at me at the end of the movie.
Oh, no.
Cause shut up. Oh. That's why. So that was the only downside to my Skyfall experience was these two people.
Nice.
Who wouldn't keep their fat mouth shut.
Well, I'm definitely to think about it more to see where it ranks for me personally, you know.
Yeah. My sheer enjoyment, I have a hard time remembering myself enjoying one more.
I would, I mean, again, I know I'm maybe I'm, alone in this, but like I've always just loved License to Kill because it was so crazy, and like it really kind of was in my wheelhouse when I was watching Bond at the time, and it was so different from Roger Moore. But
yeah,
way though, is it a finer film than Skyfall? You know, I mean, Skyfall is like a great movie in its own right. I mean, it's the most beautiful Bond ever shot. Wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, just the that fight scene with the lights on the backdrop. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. In the Shanghai scene?
Yeah, Shanghai stuff.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Fantastic. And just like, you know, it was gorgeous to look at, for sure.
And really sad. By the end, like what we're talking about with the final stuff, just it wound up being so satisfying.
Yes.
That when it ended, and it felt like a real ending and not
– right.
Like they tried to force it out and just finish it.
At the same time, you got to tell me that you're amped for what's next, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But just to be given this installment and a hard end,
yes,
is with no ambiguity, just a hard end. That yes. If there was one complete Bond movie that I could recommend to somebody, now I enjoy probably The Man with the Golden Gun. More than any other, because it's basically an episode of Fantasy Island. but if I was going to recommend a single Bond movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and hard on either side of that, I don't think that it'd be anything but Skyfall.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have a hard time disputing any of that, for sure. I mean, I love Casino Royale as well, but again, maybe that was in response. It is Casino Royale is objectively excellent, and we don't get to fall without Casino Royale. Let's be honest.
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think Skyfall might be, again, a better film. I think Casino Royale might be a better action movie. You know, I don't know. I think they're very close, but I definitely respond to Casino Royale in a big way because that kind of erased the bad taste of like Die Another Day.
Oh God! I watched the day before I watched Skyfall. I think I saw it was Die Another Day, the one with Denise Richards.
No, that's even one. The World Is Not Die Another Day is with
that one. That's the one that I saw, and it's oh my God!
Yeah, Toby Stevens using the power glove to fire a laser at Pierce Brosnan while
this is so horrible. Yeah. How could they commit this to film and like say, you know, pay us for this? Right. So Golden, you know, so Casino Royale is a great response to that and feels really good. But given, and it's been a little while since I've seen Casino Royale, so like I said, I've got to see Skyfall again. But from my initial impressions are so much stronger than my initial impressions of Casino Royale.
And again, going back to The Dark Knight, a parallel I might draw, like Casino Royale is to Batman Begins, you know, like mm-hmm. Skyfall is a Dark Knight kind of, you know, where Casino Royale kind of lays that groundwork, you know, starts that world in kind of exhilarating fashion, you know, with a lot of questions being left open. And all that to give you something substantial like Skyfall. You know, like something that takes it to the next level. I don't know where, I guess Quantum of Solace would be the Batman and Robin in that whole.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So, but yeah, I think it was just, you know, I don't know, I mean, it's.
Well, you talk about how the movie had a real definitive ending, which I agree with, and you raise the question of what comes next.
Yeah.
This movie almost didn't get made because MGM is financially hurting and they couldn't get the money for it. And so could this be the last Bond? Could this be the end of the series?
No, I mean, Craig has signed up for like 4 more movies.
Yeah, I can't imagine. There's if it were to end on Skyfall, I'd be satisfied. I'd be okay.
It is not happening. I will go on record. It will not happen.
People will pay for it.
I mean, for Skyfall is the number one 2D movie, I guess. I just read somewhere in Europe, you know.
Yeah, it's made, $560 million?
Yeah, it's the number two of all time, I'm guessing.
After a
3D
week?
Movie that must not be named, is it?
Yeah.
But
after like a week?
But it banked huge over here. It banked 100 million plus. There's no way that movie is not getting made, you know, and if it isn't, it's a total, you know, it's just like a cluster F of like MGM's ineptitude or something.
Absolutely, sure. And that wouldn't be a surprise. But it's kind of like the final, if had the end of season 3 of Community been the final episode, those last 2 or 3 minutes of Community would have satisfied me.
Yeah.
Right. I would have been okay. I'm looking forward to the next step in friggin' February. But like with Skyfall, it would have been okay, but I can't imagine that they don't.
There's just too
much money.
Yeah, too much money. I think, like, Craig owns this role now, you know. I mean, I'm still shocked, because when you look at him, he looks like this weird guy. He gets punched in the face a lot with big ears.
Yeah, he looks like he's been mashed.
But, he just owns it, you know. He just brings it, like...
And in the times that he was in the bar stuff, the Shanghai stuff, he actually does pretty well as the suave guy. I was kind of surprised to see.
His attitude, you know, more than mm-hmm. it looks.
Mm-hmm. It is. You're right, Mac. And I have polled female Bond, you know, lovers, including my wife, and said, you know, like the guy seems like kind of goofy looking, but it's swagger, man. That's what it is, you know. And the fact that he could probably bench press a Volkswagen, so.
Yeah, he totally owns it.
So, yeah.
He totally owns it.
It's just remarkable that you can get something this exciting and fresh in a series that's so
old. 24 movies or whatever it is.
I mean, with its shares of ups and downs, but it's really kind of.
That all three of us give a damn.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And everybody else.
And I think it's a testament just to kind of that enduring. Just the icon of that character, too, you know? I mean, how it just kind of transcends, like, cultural periods of our time, too. I know, just, there's something about...
There's a book in that.
There's a book in that, right?
Whatever. Well, many have pointed out that the Bond movies, each one kind of reflects the era in which it was made.
Yeah, which... Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Good Lord, what does Moonraker reflect?
Reflects came out the year after Star Wars.
that is exactly what, yes, that reflects the Star Crash, you know, of our culture. All right, very good. Well, my new headset is actually biting into my ears, so we'll call this because we could probably go on and on, but Skyfall obviously rules. So if you hung with us, thank you for hanging with us, and check us out next week at the Friday Filibuster. Mac, take us away.
Shazam.